Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
It's the Fan War Room, training camp edition. Here's Brandon Stokely, Nick Ferguson, Nate Jackson, DenverFan.com's James Marillac, and your host, Mike Evans.
Ah, this is amazing. This is great. I can't remember the last time we were all together doing something like this out on the road. I mean, it's been over like 2 years since we've done something like this. We're out on the road. We're here at Brothers Barbecue, Arapahoe and I-25 for our Fan War Room Training Camp Edition. Of course, brought to us by Brothers Barbecue. We would love to have you come out here. I mean, this is something that we haven't had a chance to enjoy for a long time, being able to hang out with you great listeners. So come on by. They got great food here, of course, great lunches. Stokely's already hammered half his sandwich. I'm going to work on the hot links. I don't know where the other guys and what they're waiting for, but I'm sure they'll join the fray. Let's jump right into it. I got Brandon Stokely, James Marillat, Nate Jackson, Nick Ferguson. And, guys, so glad to have you with us all here today. There seems to be a legitimate difference of opinion across this station, almost split down the middle among all the hosts. Is Vic Fangio leaning towards Teddy Bridgewater or Drew Locke? We'll go around the table. Nick, I'll start down there with you.
Well, the most logical situation is to go with Teddy Bridgewater for the obvious reasons. Your job is on the line. For the past 2 years, you've been below 500. You're looking for a quarterback that can be consistent. And right now, with all the upside that we've seen from Drew Locke, the arm talent and all that, he hasn't really hit the mark. He hasn't really been that consistent. And I know most people go back to the fact of looking at what happened against Minnesota, the 80-yard touchdown. Hey, this is what Drew can do. Yeah, we know he can do that because he has the arm. It's all the other things, being able to take the short passes. And I can sit down here and break down everything that Drew didn't do well in the game against Minnesota, because a win disguises everything. But if I'm Vic Fangio, my job is on the line, and we know that we're going to have a new owner next year. I want to go with the hot hand, and that hand is the one that is safe, and that's Teddy.
All right, Nate, right away. We got disagreement. I love it.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Drew Locke is the incumbent starter, right? So you bring in Teddy Bridgewater to beat him out. If he doesn't beat him out in front of you on a daily basis, you can't start him. And everyone who's gone to practice every day, you guys have reported, you got Drew with 9, Teddy with 6, right? And so if Teddy can't beat out Drew in practice...
you're going off of James's list?
Or yours? I mean...
It's the consensus.
That's not my list, that's yours.
Okay.
Well,
don't go off of
Jimmy's
list.
Jimmy's compiling it. We're sending it to
correct.
Him.
Yeah, okay. You're blaming okay. me here,
he's the
guys.
Secretary.
That's right.
Okay. Sorry.
That's right.
Go ahead.
You're gaining points right away by calling him Jimmy. So
Jimmy the clown.
Wow.
Hey, 1203.
That didn't take long.
It's on a shirt. I mean, we're selling the shirt, guys. No, but so if Teddy hasn't beat out Drew and hasn't done the things that, you know, we thought he was going to do better than Drew, and the coaches are praising Drew for learning the system and doing the things they're asking him to do, and then you go out in the game, we have one sample to observe, that game in Minnesota. Nick, I would defy you to tell me what Drew did do wrong in that game. You said you could pick apart what he did wrong. To me, he played really well, and I don't see what you can fault with his game.
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, Nate. Because on the 80-yard touchdown you're playing against...
You should have checked it down.
Wait a minute, no. He's
that would have been the smart play.
No, it wasn't, because here's what we know. The play that we saw that was 80 yards, you go back to Carolina Panthers. We saw that play with K.J. Hamler, but it was on the right side of the field. You go back to the Broncos practice. We saw the same thing with Trey Marshall and Caden Stearns as the two safeties, and it was a one-man route, and K.J. Hamler was a bona fide wide receiver. Fast forward to the game, what did we see? It was reduced formation. You had Jerry Jeudy on the left, Hamler on the right, inside the numbers, and they were basically trying to beat quarters coverage. Hamler said it himself in the post-game interview. They were trying to make sure they identified quarters coverage and took advantage of Kareem Bynum, number 43, who was a rookie safety, who instead of staying back in quarters coverage, he came forward. He didn't read hi-hats. So if you go back to that play, Drew Locke didn't even look to Jerry Jeudy's side.
Aww.
He stayed front side the entire time.
Okay, so that was a bad play by Drew.
No, it wasn't a bad play. He took advantage of what the defense gave him.
Right.
But that is something that we know that he can do. Now, another play that happened in the game, K.J. Hamler was next to Jerry Jeudy. K.J. Hamler ran the go, Jerry Jeudy ran the out route. That route was right there, but Drew was trying to get the home run ball. It wasn't there. He pulled it down. Jerry Jeudy was there for 10 yards, could have got the first down and more. But one thing I'm happy that Drew did, he did go through his progressions. He went 1 to 3. He couldn't get it to the tight end because the linebacker dropped back in that window, and that's when he pulled it down and he ran the ball.
So that's what they're asking him to do, right? Make smarter decisions with the ball. Don't force it into spots where you're going to throw a pick. So how is that a bad play?
Right, we'll let you two argue some more here, but yeah. I want to get the other
we'll
two
move on, move
involved
on.
In it.
All right, what was the question again?
Do you think Vic is a Bridgewater guy or a lock guy?
The only thing Vic Fangio likes more than a sweatshirt on a 90-degree day is a scapegoat. And if he goes with Drew Lock, he's got somebody to blame it on if they don't start off well. If he goes Teddy Bridgewater, he is pushing all his chips in, right? He could be gone by the time we get to October. Drew Lock has done everything he could have done to hold on to the job. He's played well. He's been just as good at Teddy as Teddy at practice, which, you know, look, we've all been down there every day. A lot of those days, they've both been kind of crappy, but they've both been the same. It's not like Teddy's beat him out. So I think he's going to go Drew Lock. I think Drew Lock has earned the job, and like I say, I think he gives him a little bit of wiggle room, and Vic Fangio loves to point the finger.
How does he represent a scapegoat?
If they start off poorly, you can blame it on the young quarterback. You can blame it on Drew Lock. If you go Teddy Bridgewater and it doesn't go well, you're the guy who picked Teddy Bridgewater. You're the guy who went down that path. You're the guy who said, we're gonna bail on the potential. We're going to bail on the future. It's all about winning now. Okay, then you better win now. I don't think Vic Fangio wants to paint himself into that corner.
Raspy Stoke.
Yeah. I don't think that Vic's worried or concerned about finding a scapegoat here. I think the better quarterback throughout camp has been Teddy Bridgewater, the more consistent quarterback. Now, both of them have been, like you said, James, underwhelming in a lot of practices. So there's not one guy that's really taken this job. And I think your first mistake here is looking at Drew Lock as the incumbent. Like, Teddy's got to knock Drew Lock out. That's the absolute wrong way. Drew Lock hasn't earned anything this year. Okay, he was given the starter's job last year. He was one of the worst quarterbacks in the league. Teddy doesn't have to knock anyone out. Teddy just has to play better than Drew Lock, and I think he's been a little bit more consistent than Drew the majority of the practices. Now, do I think Vic will go with Teddy or with Drew? I don't know. It seems like the momentum is saying he's going to pick Drew. I don't know where that's coming from, but it seems like you just kind of start to put the pieces together. You heard Mike Kliss with us yesterday, the day before. And so, but for me, I think Teddy Bridgewater, for the way that the Broncos are going to try to win football games, is the better option for the Denver Broncos.
What makes more sense in terms of, hey, if you start this guy, it's easier to go to that guy versus the other way around? Like, I've always felt, one thing I'm hearing from Teddy Bridgewater is a guy who sounds like the perfect backup, sounds like the perfect guy who will accept a role, flourish in that role, be ready to serve as a mentor, a sounding board to Drew, and also be ready to go in and play and probably play at a decent level. It just seems that it would make more sense to start Drew knowing you can turn to Teddy. Do you guys look at it? Anybody raise a hand, look at it the opposite way?
I do.
You think it's easier to start Teddy and go to Drew?
Well, you see, Drew, when did he play his best football, Mike? His rookie year.
Yep.
What did he do for the first 11 weeks of the season? He watched and sat and watched and sat and took in the game and was able, no pressure on him. He came in as a relief pitcher, 4-1. He played really good, didn't he? So I think Drew, he's still a very young quarterback. I think he could benefit from sitting back and watching and learning the game that way, just like he did his rookie year. And I think if you started with Drew and then you left Drew and benched Drew and went to Teddy, you can't go back to Drew. I think you can go Teddy, Drew,
Teddy,
back to Teddy.
Drew, Teddy, Drew.
I think
Drew,
they're out of luck Teddy. Either way, because they made it a competition, right? Because if you pick a winner and you have to change your mind 3 weeks in, 4 weeks in, you're admitting that you blew it. Right? That you had all offseason, you had training camp, you had preseason games, and you still got it wrong. Had they just brought in Teddy Bridgewater, which I never had an issue with, and say, he's the backup, and, you know, we think we have a playoff caliber team, and if Drew gets hurt, we need to have somebody we can turn to. That can be your public spin. And in the back of your mind, you know, hey, if Drew falls flat on his face, we got a veteran we can go to. Well, now you can play that card. But if you pick Drew, and then you have to go to Teddy down the road, you got egg on your face. If you pick Teddy and you have to go to Drew down the road, you got egg on your face because you had all this time, all these weeks, and you still got it wrong. I think the Broncos have created a situation where they don't, they're going to be out of luck whoever they go to if they have to switch.
Well, the way I look at this, guys, is that the Broncos need to find one guy that they can commit to for 17 weeks. And the reason Teddy is here is because Drew hadn't really shown anything, like Brandon said. He hasn't given the coaching staff any type of faith or confidence that you can go out and be that guy. And that's why when we would see the one play, wow, play, you know, explosive play, everyone was so excited about that. But you can't win games in this league like that every week with one or two explosive plays, and that's it, because it's four quarters, 60 minutes, and you have to do something to keep your defense fresh to give them incentive to go out there and play. If I'm a defensive player on this team, I'm going to Vic Fangio and say, based on what I've seen thus far, and we can say, well, it hasn't really been that exciting with either quarterback, I feel more confident and secure in what Teddy can do opposed to what Drew can do. Now, hopefully they do that because you have a defensive-minded coach, and he's going to listen to his guys.
Nate, you were out there last week in Minnesota, and you saw the joint practices. You saw the game. Have you seen examples of Drew Lock improving on those areas that we were so critical of him after last year? Decision-making, seeing the field, reading protection, all of that. Have you seen growth in those areas? We know he can make the big-arm throw down the field to K.J. Hamler. But have you seen examples of improvement in those other areas?
Well, I think the fact that practice is underwhelming and boring for people means that, yeah, that's what he's doing. He's not taking the shots downfield. We want to see a fireworks show at practice where the quarterbacks are just lighting it up. They're not set up that way. These quarterbacks are being drilled to take the safe play, to not throw it into that coverage, to not do this, to not do that. And the fact that Drew isn't really shining means to me that he is doing what the coaches are asking him to do. Pat Shurmur steps to the podium and says the same thing about Drew Lock. He's making the improvements we've asked him to do. You saw him do it in the game against Minnesota. So I think the games are really where you see that play out. You know, practices are for coaches. Games are for players. Practices are scripted. You have the play on the script. You have the coverage. You have the blitz. You have the front. You know what's coming. They drew up that scenario to put you through that. And there's one answer to that question typically in practice. Where are you going to throw the ball? So in the games is where you see it open up. Obviously, there's no script in games. I think we can, you know, psychoanalyze the process of who would come off the bench better, Teddy or Drew, and you can make an argument for either one. But I think the ultimate question is, who's going to score more points for your offense? Who's the more dynamic point scorer? Obviously, you got to protect the ball. You can't turn the ball over. But, you know, an interception here or there, also not the end of the world, you know. It didn't used to be that way, where one interception would have us up in arms. Who's going to score more points? Because we can't rely on this defense to win every game for us. We think we can, but what's going to happen? There's going to be injuries. It's going to be weeks when, you know, the opposing offense puts up 20, 30 points. Do you have the offense that can score or match them and exceed those point totals? I think that's what you got to consider when you're picking a quarterback.
When they, do you feel, based on what you've seen in Minnesota, what you've seen or what you've heard through James from practice, and what you saw last season, that Drew Lock is capable of putting points on the board to match maybe a Justin Herbert or a Patrick Mahomes? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
How did you come to that foregone conclusion? Because last year we got a chance to see Drew Lock in his offense.
Yeah.
And we didn't see, I didn't see anything, and you guys can help me out and tell me what you saw last season that gave you the indication that Drew can matriculate the ball down the field and score more than 16 points a game.
Well, I mean, last time I checked, football is a team sport, and offenses need cohesion to move the ball, okay? They were on a shortened offseason, actually no offseason, no training camp, no installation.
So was Justin Herbert.
Hold on, can I finish?
Okay, go ahead.
Is that okay?
Go right ahead.
No offseason, okay? New system, new offensive coordinator, rookie receiver over here, rookie receiver over here, number one receiver injured. That's a recipe for disaster in your passing game. I would say also Pat Shurmur didn't really call the games to his quarterback strength. They had a good running game. They didn't really lean on it. Their play calling was all over the place. And if you don't agree with that, then you weren't watching. You know, I think he showed enough in moments to think, hey, maybe this guy can be developed into a long-term solution. There's enough of a promise there in his talent that, yeah, you should try to coach that into him. If he can't do it, you move on from him. But Teddy, you know what he is. He's been on four teams. He's shown you what he is as a professional. Drew Lock has not shown you that potential yet. So if you're serious about trying to develop him, to me, you give him that chance.
If memory serves, I saw Drew Lock beat Justin Herbert 31-30.
Yeah.
Right? With
yeah.
a comeback in
yeah,
the fourth
yeah,
quarter.
Yeah.
At Empower Field. And he beats him on the road if Jerry Jeudy doesn't drop 17 passes or whatever it was, right? We stopped counting at 5 or 6. Like, wasn't that like a 22-16 game or 16-13? I don't remember the score of that, but that was a close game. He almost got him in position at the end to win it. So I'm with you. Justin Herbert, look, I'd love to have Justin Herbert here. He's a great quarterback. But we saw him go toe-to-toe with Justin Herbert last year. I don't understand this let's try and win game 17-13 formula. Because Vic Fangio's been here 2 years. He had a lead against Mitch Trubisky, against Gardner Minshew, against Jacoby Brissett. They had a 20-0 lead up in Minnesota at halftime that they blew. They blew a lead to Tennessee late. Like, this try to win games in the tens or in the teens with Vic Fangio hasn't worked. So to go with a quarterback that's going to help Vic Fangio try and win games that way, I'm not giving him the benefit of the doubt on that one.
Well, I think overall, I mean, you're looking at it the wrong way. You try to win a football game however possible. I mean, what you don't think Teddy can score, 28 points in a game, 27 points in a game? I just think that this team is going to be a conservative team. They're going to try to take a few shot plays, run the football well, play great defense, and that's more towards Teddy. What I haven't liked, what I've seen from Drew during training camp day in and day out, we're still seeing the not quite sure what's going on. That we saw last year, where he's holding the ball way too long, right? What does he do? He scrambles out of the pocket. I mean, you've seen that.
Sure.
And I've seen it too much. And I think in the game, if he's in there for four quarters, he's going to get exposed because of that. Now, if you're only throwing the ball seven times, yeah, okay, 6 for 7, it was great. He played great. But through the course of a game, through the course of a season, that will catch up to him.
All right, it's the Fan War Room. We're at Brothers Barbecue, Arapaho and I-25. Come on by. We've got stuff to give away. I mean, this is a full-on hang out with you remote again that we used to do in the old days, and we're doing it again. We got great food for lunch as we hang
out.
What
is Orlando eating over there, by the way?
Unbelievable.
What is going on?
That is not on your diet.
Burpones, what do you call them?
It's like a brontosaurus leg.
Yeah, that's it.
Good grief.
Yeah. Well, he's enjoying it, that's for sure. All right. The idea of Vic Fangio making this quarterback decision, or should it be George Payton? Big picture versus, hey, personal, maybe even selfish reasons, James.
Of whether or not Vic Fangio should be making this decision?
Yeah.
No, he shouldn't be. There are very few times the general manager should step in and tell the head coach what to do, right? Like, I talked about it during the Nuggets season of at some point Tim Connelly had to come tell Michael Malone, you're playing Michael Porter Jr. 30 minutes a game. Sorry, that's the only way we're going to be a championship contender is if that kid turns into something. In this instance, I think George Payton needs to come in and say, look, the goal here isn't to be 8-9, 9-8. Now, he may think it is because he thinks let's play relevant games in November and December. Well, he's going to have a rude awakening. That doesn't fly here in Broncos country. That's not the goal. We're not hoping to be 500 and, flirting with the playoffs. It's are you on a track that at some point you could see it get into the Super Bowl? Teddy Bridgewater ain't putting you on that. So I think this is an instance where George Payton needs to come in and override Vic Fangio and say, we're doing what's best for this franchise long term, and that's playing the kid that's got some upside.
Okay, but Nick, all right, wait a minute.
Ridiculous.
Hold on.
I'm going to tell Nick
to hold on. Why do you think it's ridiculous?
It's because a general manager can't call a shot on the quarterback. Vic Fangio's job's on the line. You have to let that guy at least try to win football games this year, and that's just the way it is. I mean, Vic's got to make that decision. Pat Shurmur's got to make that decision. They're the ones that are going to be fired. Well, how does that make George Payton look if he makes them play a guy, then they get fired? That's a bad way to operate. I wouldn't want you as my boss,
James. If Joe Flacco hadn't gotten hurt in Indy, Vic would still be playing him.
Wow.
Are you trusting that guy with the decision?
Here's the problem with what James is kind of bringing up. If you let George Payton make the decision, would he not have already done that when he tried to go out and acquire Matthew Stafford? He was looking at all these other quarterbacks. If he was so gung-ho about the kid and all the upside, why bring in Teddy Bridgewater? He could have kept the band of brothers together in the quarterback room, Jeff Driscoll, Blake Bortles, and all those guys. But right now, this is a decision that he has to allow Vic Fangio to make. I brought in Teddy Bridgewater. to give you a quarterback that can make Drew Lock that much better by competing with him. So let's go out there and let those guys compete. You make the decision as far as which guy you feel you want to lead your team, because Vic is a defensive-minded coach. It's about him keeping his job and his defense. Last year, once again, as I tried to tell Nate, what did we see from Drew Lock last year that would lead us to believe that he was actually helping the defense? Now, we can all sit and blame Pat Shurmur, but at some point, you got to put on your big boy draws, and you have to pull up your bootstraps and say that you can go out there and you can win games. Drew Lock, as much as people try to say, well, last year was a rookie year for him, it's not. This is a redshirt junior year for him. Now he has to put up or shut up. So if I'm Vic, I'm going to go with the guy who's going to help me win ball games and protect my defense, and that'd be Teddy.
Yeah, I think for Vic, he has to make this decision. This is not George Payton's decision to make. Vic has been coaching football for 40 years. He's been in the NFL for 30-something. He's been game planning on how to stop quarterbacks his whole life. He knows what a good quarterback is. The question he's going to ask himself is, do I choose one based on who puts my defense in the best position, or do I choose the quarterback that scares me the most as a defensive coordinator? How's he looking at this quarterback battle? Who's he talking to? Who's he listening to? Mike Shula, Pat Shurmur. He has to collaborate with all these individuals, but ultimately he's got to pull the trigger on it. So I think he's pretty close. He's probably getting the advice of his offensive coordinators, but he's mulling this over, and he's probably going to wait till this last game to do it. But I think they got a leader in the clubhouse.
Well, I think ultimately it's going to be Pat Shurmur that decides. I think ultimately he's going to lean on Pat Shurmur for this decision. He hired Pat Shurmur to be the captain of the offense. Vic doesn't mess with the offense. We know that. We've seen it. And if you're out at training camp, you see it. He can't answer questions about the offense after practice. He doesn't watch all. He cares about his baby. His baby is the
defense.
Wait a minute. So I think he's going to lean on Pat Shurmur and Pat Shurmur, because Pat Shurmur's the one calling these plays. So I think it's ultimately going to be Pat Shurmur making this decision.
So it's absurd for it to go up the food chain on the decision, but not absurd for him to just delegate it down?
Yes, because who is calling the offense, James?
Oh, my
you want
goodness.
That guy to
now
have the
want,
guy
now
that
Now
he,
we
right?
want Pat what, Shurmur making the decisions.
I
he makes
don't
all the good decisions
want Pat Shurmur making the decisions. Did I say I?
With the Giants. I mean, there's a guy who's
did
just
I say
batting
I?
1,000.
I didn't say
no,
I don't
saying.
Want it. I'm just telling you what's going to happen.
At least George Payton doesn't have a history of misses.
I'm just telling you what's going to happen.
But, James, here's the problem. And this is when George Payton took over and didn't go scorched earth and chose to or was told that he had to bring back this coaching staff, he lost the ability to have control. And for better or for worse, you're sticking with Vic, and you got to give Vic every opportunity to save his hide.
I think he has. Look at the cost of that defense. He's got the most expensive defense in the league. And you're a defensive-minded coach, and you're this evil genius, and you're a defensive guru, and all these things that I don't know where these labels came from, but they got slapped on a guy who's been in the league for 30-plus years and been to one Super Bowl and has zero rings. But okay, so he's given him that. Like, if you're a defensive guy, here's the most expensive defense in football. Here's Von Miller. Here's Kareem Jackson. Here's Pat Surtain. We're going to make Justin Simmons, at least for, 30 days, the most expensive, highest-paid safety in football. Like, he's given it all to him. That's it, it's still on Vic.
Vic, ultimately, you know what he's going to do, right? Flip a coin. It's going to come down to that, man.
Have you been working on it?
Hey, maybe I'll flip a coin.
No, you just... You gotta get a
Is
little.
Is it good? Drew's good. Teddy's so, good. Maybe I'll flip a coin.
So we're leaving it to a guy who ordered a burger at Elway's. That's what we're doing. That's the guy who made that choice.
Hey, he knows what he wants, right? Okay. He's comfortable. He's comfortable in his own sweats.
Okay. He is comfortable in his own sweats and sweatshirt. We are live from Brothers Barbecue, Arapaho and I-25. Come on by. We're giving you a chance to sign up to win some Brothers Barbecue gift certificates. Very easy to do. Great lunch. Come on by, enjoy it, enjoy the broadcast. Nick and Nate and Stoke are all signing autographs.
James
and I are just here.
James is waiting until after the show.
Looking handsome, I guess, right?
I got a box of Sharpies in the car.
He came prepared.
Brand new. All right. Never been opened.
Coming up next, the NFL Network broke down their top 10 breakout players for this year. There's a Bronco on the list. Who is he, and do you think he's ready to do it? That's coming up next.
Live from Brothers Barbecue off I-25 in Arapaho, it's the Fan War Room, Training Camp Edition. Here's Brandon Stokely, Nick Ferguson, Nate Jackson, DenverFan.com's James Marilat, and your host, Mike Evans.
Third long here. Jeudy with the catch on the run at the 30 and across midfield. A burst from Jerry Jeudy, and he will take it the distance. Touchdown, Denver, 92 yards.
So NFL Network's Peter Schrager today listed his top 10 breakout players for the year. He had Jerry Jeudy third on that list. Is he ready to do it? And can we use that one play last week, the fourth down slant to Jeudy in the end zone, as an example of why he won't, Nate Jackson?
Nate, I'm going to say this. Nate, hey.
Oh, yeah, I was just going first.
I was listening to you the other day talk about Jerry Jeudy in the slant. I mean, hey,
is that wrong?
No.
Hold on, Nate. Brandon's upset.
Go ahead.
Nate, make your case.
Okay, so a receiver has to attack the ball and come flat down the line of scrimmage on a slant and not fade up the field, which is what he did. Tell me how I'm wrong.
Well,
what?
Nate, for a slant, I mean, like, you know, slant, you take a 45 degree angle. Now you want
not down there. You want not when he's on your hip.
You want to flatten it, but you know, if you want to go straight down the line, then they need to call an under route. I mean, look, sometimes the DB gets paid money too, right? And those guys make plays.
Okay.
So like every play, Jerry Jeudy's not going to be able to get wide open and catch
right.
the football.
Exactly.
So sometimes a slant's just not the right call. I mean, if they would have had a fade call, it would have been open.
Of course, but it wasn't. It was a slant call, so you got to do what you got to do to make the play. If the ball's thrown to you. And the guy's on your hip. You keep him on your hip with your body. He faded up the field and gave him an easy shot at it. Am I wrong?
Yeah, you're wrong.
How?
Because the way that I look at it, Jerry Jeudy set up the route by going outside, and he crossed the face.
Doesn't matter.
Just can I get this out?
Yes, you can.
All right, thank you. So he crossed the face of the DB. The DB had his left arm on his waist, and the ball, to me, that's what I'm looking at. The ball has to be thrown out a little in front of your wide receiver so he can make that catch. Anytime, and we teach our DBs this, if the ball is thrown on your low hip, then that gives us an opportunity to bring in the hand like the DB did and swipe it and knock it away. If that ball is thrown out maybe 1 or 2 yards in front of Jerry Jeudy, he comes down with that catch. So from my standpoint, I think that you're wrong looking at DB versus wide receivers on the slant route inside the red zone.
Was it a perfect route? No, it wasn't a perfect route, but it wasn't an awful route. It wasn't a great throw on top of that. So I think both of those guys could have done a little bit better there. But to just look at Jerry Jeudy and then I heard you and Evans the other morning, y'all started going into, and then you started questioning his toughness. I'm like, wait a second. This guy is, did you watch this guy play at Alabama? This guy doesn't run out of bounds. This guy looks for contact.
Well, we had to play along the back of the end zone last year
looking at one play that, you know, in his whole career, I say watch the bulk of it. This guy's tough. Did you see him run out of bounds after that catch the other day? No.
How many of those drops were last year a byproduct of a guy who was worried about getting hit?
I can't answer that. I don't know. I just think it was a guy that lost confidence. It was a guy that was, you know, thinking a lot. And when you start to struggle, you think a lot. And that's what I think it was more so than him worrying about getting hit. Now, we'll see this year. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm not questioning his toughness. Every football player is tough. I'm not saying Jerry Jeudy's not tough. Does he excel getting open in space and getting wide open? Yes. Does he struggle with contested catches, particularly slants, when the DB's on his hip? Yes. And he has to learn how to body him out and make those tough catches. If you want to be the number one receiver, you have to come down with those. It's not always going to be a perfect throw. I agree. Wasn't a perfect throw. They're not always perfect throws. If that's what you're asking for, you're going to be disappointed. As a receiver, your mentality has to be, once that ball leaves his hand, that's my ball. I have to get that ball. To me, Jerry Jeudy doesn't have that mentality in traffic yet. It's something you develop, I guess. You can't simulate that in practice. Look, he's an amazing player. We need him to be awesome, right? I'm just talking about, we talk about strengths, we talk about the weaknesses. To me, Jerry Jeudy's weakness is in traffic, contested catches. And that example on 4th and 2 was a perfect example of it. He faded up the field, like it or not.
I'm with Nate on this. And look, I think Jerry Jeudy's going to have a monster year. I do. I think he's going to have a year where he can put up the type of numbers Justin Jefferson put up last year. And those were crazy. I think he had 88 catches, 1,400 yards, and nearly 10 touchdowns. I think he's going to have a big year. But I do think Saturday pointed out something that is a little bit of cause for concern, right? Both of Drew Lock's incompletions. the fourth and two at the end of the end zone, and then it was a, you know, go route down the sideline. Both of them were intended for Jerry Jeudy, and he didn't get any separation. I think there is a question of, is this guy a star in practice, or is he a star in games? We need to see that translate more consistently. We played the 92-yard touchdown coming back in. Big play. Not a lot of guys in the league can make that play. He had the touchdown catch from Brett Rippon against the Jets where he went up and Randy Moss, the DB. Great play. But we need to see it more consistently. At some point, I don't care what you do down at Dove Valley. I care what you do at Empower Field, and I think Nate makes a valid point on that.
Well, I'm sure that Brandon would back me up on this. A lot of the throws that that quarterbacks make in the NFL, they're going to be tight window throws. And it's not going to be like college where the receiver will have two or three steps on the DB, and then now the window is enormous. No, there's going to be tight coverage where ball placement is going to be key. I played with Andre Johnson in Houston with the Texans, and there were a lot of times the DB was in phase with him right in the hip. But even with that, he was always open. So as a quarterback, you have to know how to throw guys open. That's why ball placement is so key. And this is where I feel Drew Lock hasn't advanced as a quarterback. He can throw with space. We saw it twice last season on explosive plays against the Chargers and against the Raiders, the dig route from Jerry Jeudy coming on the right side. But can you make that throw as a quarterback when that DB is in a hip pocket of a wide receiver? That is the growth and maturity that we need to see. Well, I need to see from one Drew Lock.
Yeah, but Stoke, on those balls that aren't perfectly thrown, isn't there something to the idea that, I'll use a basketball reference, it's your job as a receiver to box out that DB?
Yeah,
to Nate's point,
I'm not saying that you know, he doesn't need to go get balls in traffic. All I'm saying on that play, it particularly, that, you know, the DB gets paid also. And when you run a slant, you run it at a certain angle. And sometimes you have to flatten it a little bit more, but you don't take it straight down the line. Now, that's an under route. Right, so the offensive coordinator needs to call something different. And when you get in close quarters, yes, traffic's going to be there. You got to make certain catches. DB made a good play. I'm not going to look at that as a huge negative on Jerry Jeudy. Could he have flattened it a little bit more? Possibly, but the DB gets paid also, and the DB made a good play. So, but certainly, yes, NFL, you're going to see a lot of contested catches. I mean, that's the way it is. You got to make those catches, and certainly he didn't make enough of them last year. There was too many drops, but I'm expecting him to make them this year.
Nate, you're shaking your head in disgust.
Not disgust. I just disagree with his assessment about a slant. So obviously, a slant is a 45-degree angle, but if your guy's about to undercut you and he's on your hip, you have to flatten that out. You have to feel him on your hip and keep him behind you and reach out and pluck that thing no matter what. And if it does bring you as flat as an under, so be it. As long as you catch the ball, it's a 2-yard route, it's going to be a touchdown.
But it's hard to reach out and pluck it out of the air when it's on your hip, Nate.
You not if you body him up like that.
But you're still talking ball placement.
We're on the radio. We're not on TV.
James, no one's watching. Where's the live stream?
Let me tell you.
I understood what he was doing.
James Maryland had no chance of reaching across and knocking down that ball right there.
So you throttle down, and so it's not behind you. It's in front of you if you slow down and keep him behind you, like I'm doing right now.
But
with
you
James.
Can also, Nate, you can also, like, if you're running a slant at a 45-degree angle and you're talking about being flat, like if you keep it on that 45-degree angle and that DB tries to undercut you, that's when the ball's high and outside.
For
right?
sure.
So there's different ways to complete that pass. And at some point, you got to have route integrity. You know, you can't take a slant route and all of a sudden make it a 3-yard under route. I mean, no. you got to, you know, have a little bit of route integrity. I know what you're saying. We're kind of saying the same thing, but we're just a little bit off there. Ultimately, look, the DB is going to make some plays. Jerry Jeudy has got to catch the ball a little bit better in traffic, be more consistent there. I didn't see a whole lot wrong with that play. It could have been a little bit better pass. Jerry Jeudy could have ran a little bit better play. In the end zone, those DBs aren't moving, right? So it's close quarters. You know, you got to cross that guy's face, like Nate's saying. But at the same time, sometimes that guy has hard inside leverage, and it's a difficult thing to do. You're not going to complete every one of them.
All right, we're live at Brothers Barbecue Arapaho and I-25 for our Fan War Room training camp edition. We got Brandon Stokely, James Marilat, Nate Jackson, and Nick Ferguson. We invite you to come on by. Great lunch, great food.
Ooh, I'm full.
You are full.
Ooh,
you,
man. I still got a couple ribs.
You house that thing.
All right.
And we welcome you to come on by. Enjoy the broadcast. Talk to the guys in between breaks. Get some autographs signed. Guy, you brought your helmet over. You got that signed. Good job. All right, coming up next, Repgate. Is it a big deal? James Merrillack can't wait. Totally different explanations from Drew Locke and Pat Shurmur. What does it all mean? Does it even matter? That's next.
Live from Brothers Barbecue off I-25 in Arapahoe, it's the Fan War Room, Training Camp Edition. Here's Brandon Stokely, Nick Ferguson, Nate Jackson, DenverFan.com's James Marilat, and your host, Mike Evans.
You can't hide, you're a lying eye.
Believe it or not, we have scripts that are set reps, and just so happened that there was talk about a play, and it was actually my last rep of that set.
That was the crowd noise day. I was more ticked off at technology, because when we amped up the sound, for whatever reason, Drew's helmet went off, so I couldn't communicate with him. I wasn't upset with Drew.
Repgate. Seemed like it was ready to die down with the aid of some state-sponsored bullet points. Then came totally different explanations from Locke and Pat Shurmur, which you just heard. Guys, does it matter? And if it does, why does it matter? James Merrillat.
I don't think when it occurred on Tuesday, it really mattered, right? I think we all, whatever level of sports we've played, we've seen coaches get mad at players or get mad at us. Or if we've coached, we've gotten mad at players. And you yank somebody from a drill and you want to explain it to them face-to-face of what was going on, I don't think that would have been a big deal. But like with most of these instances, just tell the truth and it goes away. I think that what may make this a big deal is clearly they're trying to spin it, and they didn't get their bullet points straight. They had version A and version B. The beta test didn't get passed out right, and people didn't repeat the right verbiage, and it makes me wonder why. Why are we trying to spin this away?
Do you have a theory?
Well, I think Tyler's theory that, Drew Locke is their guy and they're trying to cover for him and trying to make it to where, hey, if this is the guy that's going to be the starter, we don't want it to appear as though he's getting into confrontations with his offensive coordinator. Okay, that makes some sense, and I'll buy into that, and that's fine. But I just find the whole thing weird that they would go to this extent to explain away one rep. We were all there. We all saw what happened.
Yes.
Drew Locke got pulled from the drill and got replaced by Teddy Bridgewater. And then he and Pat Shurmur had an animated conversation. That's what happened. I saw it with my own eyes. So they can come up with whatever story they want. The reality is that's what occurred.
There was no ever, like James, you said yesterday, Drew Locke never went to his helmet. Like, something's wrong with my helmet. He was just standing in the huddle. I was watching it on Tuesday. He was standing in the huddle and Pat Shurmur sent Teddy Bridgewater about 6-7 yards around the huddle to tap Drew Locke out. Drew Locke wasn't ever looking at Pat like, hey, I can't get the play here. Something's wrong with my helmet. That never happened. Drew Locke was oblivious to Teddy Bridgewater coming behind him and tapping him out, and then he just ran off. So I can't go with the helmet thing. I don't know if he had an issue with his helmet later, earlier, but during that moment, there was no issue with the helmet. Hence, Drew Locke didn't tell us there was an issue with the helmet. If there was an issue with the helmet, don't you think on Wednesday that Drew Locke would have said, I had an issue with my helmet, I couldn't hear? That would have been very easy to say. He didn't say that one time. Why not? Well, because there must not have been an issue with the helmet at that time.
All right, same follow-up then. Significance. Why? What does this all matter in the big scheme?
I don't even know. It wasn't a huge deal, but the more different explanations you start to hear from different people, you ask yourself why. Is Drew Locke their plan this year, and they're trying to protect him, like James said, where they don't want their guy to seem like he's getting pulled from drills. He doesn't know what he's looking at. The same old Drew Locke. Is that why they're trying to protect him?
All right. Oh, no. Nate, you've downplayed this from the start. You just heard these two guys. Did they change your mind?
Well, I wasn't there, so I'm taking it, listening to the accounts and listening, obviously, to Drew's words and Pat Shurmur's words. And, like Zach says, two things can be true at the same time. The way the way Stoke just described it, that Drew was kind of oblivious, and Teddy came up and tapped him on the shoulder and pulled him out, that tells me, yeah, he lost count of the reps. The reps were messed up for some reason. And then he comes to the sideline, has an animated conversation with Pat Shurmur. Maybe Pat Shurmur's mad because it wasn't working. He was trying to tell Drew, and it didn't go through, so he couldn't hear him. He also talked about being irritated that whole day because of technical issues. So who knows why his hands were moving during the conversation. Sometimes people move their bodies, you know what I mean? But I've been to enough football practice to see that guys get pulled out a lot. Things happen. Guys get yelled at. Starters get yelled at. Guys who are the best players on the team mess up sometimes. You want to set them straight, you tell them right away, because that's how you do it. Sometimes you don't want to wait till they go into, you know, film. Ultimately, I don't know why they would try to protect Drew from a narrative that he messed up a play at practice. It doesn't seem to me like, if I was that coaching staff, I'd be worried about managing that, you know, damage control on that story. It doesn't seem big enough to worry about. So to me, it's a nothing burger.
Well, I guess, Nick, the only thing that, as you try to interpret it all, is that you want to try to sort of dispel this notion that Pat Shurmur got so fed up because he continues to see Drew Lock make the same mistakes over and over again, that's what we would all latch on to.
Let's be totally honest about this situation. We know that anytime something happens in an organization, they're always going to try to find a way to douse the flames, try to spin it in a totally different direction. I've been a part of teams, I've done the same thing. Something happened at practice, just the coach and the player just having a very spirited conversation, but everything is okay because we want to make sure that we project the right thing. And correct me if I'm wrong, I didn't see Pat Shurmur have somewhat of a walkie-talkie in his hands, did he?
Not that I recall, but to be, I wouldn't, you know, would I testify in a court of law that he wasn't calling in the plays that way? I don't know.
Okay,
I wasn't paying that much attention.
So with that said, and my time being around Coach Shanahan and more being Kyle Shanahan, and that is, when there's crowd noise and they're trying to get the communication and test it, there's someone with the microphone, and it's usually Kyle, and he's speaking into it to make sure that Jimmy Garoppolo can actually hear. I didn't see that yesterday, so that's the first thing that threw me off, whether this was a helmet issue or not. Also, I didn't see Drew kind of looking at his helmet. I didn't see any other equipment guys looking at the helmet like they would do on the sideline. If there's an issue, we're looking at the helmet. If we have to change the speaker, we'll change the speaker.
Yeah, no, it healed itself.
Yeah, that's right.
It fixed itself.
Yeah, so for me, the way I look at it, if Pat Shurmur felt as though there were technical issues, then he would have did that not just with Teddy, not just with Drew, he would have did that with Teddy as well. I didn't see that on the sideline. And I do, like Nick said, coaches get frustrated and they yell at players. This could have been a moment where maybe there was technical issues, then there was also frustration with Drew Lock that he had an opportunity to say something to Drew Lock, and we all had a chance to see it firsthand. So you have to know that this organization, they're going to try to protect everyone, even Teddy. So they're going to make up whatever narrative they need to do to make sure that we go, oh, everything is cool. That's not a problem here. There's nothing to see.
Well, Nate, here's my one thing that I'm also thinking about here. So if it was a helmet issue, right, and Pat Shurmur was about 5, 6, 7 yards away, right behind the huddle, standing over there with Teddy, and if it was just a helmet issue, don't you think he would have just ran over there a couple yards away or have Drew come over there and meet him, tell him to play, let him go back in the huddle? This is a competition. These reps are important. You don't pull a guy out of practice when just because of a helmet issue. You wait to get that fixed during special teams practice. You're 5 yards away from the guy. You can relay the play to him. You don't pull him out and let him miss valuable reps because he has a helmet issue.
I thought what Drew said was that he had gone a rep extra. He was supposed to be pulled out.
That's what Drew said.
Yeah,
Pat
said,
Pat's saying there was something wrong with the helmet.
Well, maybe he was trying to convey, hey, man, it's time for you to come out. Your rep's up. And he didn't hear it. He thought he was still in. And that's what got Pat frustrated. I don't know.
So we haven't seen the losing track of the reps during practice, right? We haven't seen another instance where Teddy went in, then Drew came in, and then Teddy tapped him out. So that never happened. And we never had the helmet issue at any other point during training camp. So we're supposed to believe this is just a confluence of bad luck that happened on that exact moment, and both stories are true. If you believe that, you also believe Brian Griese tripped over his dog. That's fine. We can all believe that.
You guys down there have anything to shed on that? Was that before you? That was before your time?
Well, that was a little before my time, but I'm right there with James.
All right. Well,
And I haven't looked at the RamosLaw.com text line, but I can only assume there's a bunch of, you guys are being a dead horse with this. It doesn't matter. Move on. I'll ask the three of you guys who played. Does this matter? Does this speak to anything that could potentially be a problem?
I don't really think so. I don't think it's a big issue, but the question is, why are we hearing all these different stories? Why are we hearing different stories? It should be really easy to answer. There should be one answer of what happened. But when your quarterback's saying one thing, your offensive coordinator's saying a totally different thing, it just makes you wonder why. But it was watching it unfold. It's like, oh, they just pulled Drew out of this play. You saw Drew make a negative play. They pulled him out. That just kind of, to me, it spoke of Pat Shurmur's frustration with Drew. He continues to do the same things over and over. He's holding the ball way too long. Hold, hold, hold. Then escapes the pocket. And it's just like, hey, go through your reads the right way. And so that's what it said
to me.
That's
the source of his frustration. Then that is a big deal.
Right.
Because it does speak to a pattern. All right, we're live here at Brothers Barbecue Arapaho and I-25 for our fan war room. So good to be back out here with the public, with the listeners, having a chance to interact. It's been a long time coming, so we really are glad that we're here. We're glad you're with us, and we invite you to come on by because you can check out the show. You can get autographs. You can talk to the guys for the next hour plus as we are here. Coming up next, who are the bounce-back guys on this team? How confident are we that these guys will indeed revert back to form? That's coming up next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 104.3thefan.com.